I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How okay. was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is. Yeah.
What's up? I'm Laura Corrente.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia. So today, we're bringing back our fave, Sarah Fisher.
Yeah, media reporter over at Axios, who is shedding light on all of the trends that our industry needs to follow. And interestingly enough, also trying to figure out how to take those and apply them to the mass consumer market, because as an industry, we know what we are putting out in the market is affecting consumers at large.
Yeah, I love that she's like talking about how do media trades actually speak to everyone, not just the trade community, not just the industry of media tech marketing.
Right. We wanted to get her on. She's been covering at large the latest ruling that came down from the DOJ around the $85 billion acquisition of Time Warner by AT&T, which has massive implications and sets precedent for our industry around how telco and content networks are able to converge.
What I think is really interesting from a marketing perspective is what's the opportunity for marketers. And I think it gives us an ability to go to AT&T and go to Time Warner and strike a deal that we haven't looked at before.
Yeah. And two of the things that have lived separately and continue to live separately until this thing gets finalized, which, you know, having worked with the networks on the content side and trying to figure out what is the right programming, and now, you know, something that lives separately around telco companies, which essentially own your behavior around what device you're consuming content on, when you're consuming that content,
what your preferences are,
how long you're staying, all of those sorts of things, which we've had to in the past sort of map and piecemeal, now all of a sudden present this opportunity for a really hyper targeted experience.
Yeah. And I think it's a slippery slope for content and creators on one level, but it's also a huge opportunity for consumers to get better content than they ever have and get all the wasteful content out of the system. So with that, a quickie with Sarah Fisher.
We'll be right back.
We're going to make a call to our good friend, Sarah Fisher.
Yes, the head media reporter over at Axios.
Hello?
Sarah Fisher.
Good morning.
Hey,
welcome
good morning.
To Adlandia again.
Welcome back.
Welcome
Thank
back.
Thank you. How's it going?
It's good. You tell us how it's going.
Yeah, you've been really busy covering this big news around the DOJ's
decision to just go for it and let AT&T buy Time Warner.
For $85 billion, that's B, billion dollars.
So everyone's talking about this, Sarah. What does it mean? Like, what does it mean to the industry? What does it mean to marketers? What does it mean to advertising? What are you seeing and who are you talking to about it?
Yeah, so it was pretty unprecedented when the DOJ decided to sue to block the merger last fall. Everyone thought this is a pro-industry Republican administration. They're going to be really pro-mergers and acquisitions, and they were. And when they saw that the DOJ sued to block it, people were pretty shocked. I mean, AT&T Time Warner thought this was a shoo-in. So when the U.S. District Judge, Judge Richard Leon, decided to let the merger go through, the first narrative that came out was this merger should have never been contested to begin with. The only reason the DOJ sued to block it is because Trump didn't want to win for CNN, which is one of the cable networks owned by Time Warner.
I just heard on NPR, by the way. I mean, people have been, that's like a huge narrative.
Banana.
Yeah.
Great ad. It's been an ongoing narrative throughout the case. And I will say, in the beginning of the trial, right before the official trial started, they had a bunch of reporters come in and meet with all parties. And they were talking about, AT&T was talking about why it's the lawsuit was ridiculous. And one of the arguments that they made is they said that we thought this was politically charged. The judge at the time, Judge Richard Leon, kind of actually ruled in favor of the DOJ and said, no, it's not politically charged. There could actually be a harm to consumers with this merger. But I will tell you.
What was that harm, though? What did they identify?
Oh, yeah,
you've been in the thick of
a monopoly.
It was
so the harm is this, and it's a little bit wonky, but it's important for people if you're a media nerd like me. The harm is that people were worried that if you gave an internet service provider like AT&T a content arm like Time Warner, that they would leverage the exclusivity of having certain channels like HBO, like TNT, TBS, CNN. And they would say to their consumers, look, you're going to get these channels only with us, so we can charge you more for your pay TV, your linear TV package. Now, what the DOJ is saying is that this is harmful to consumers because if you raise the price on them, A, that's an undue burden, but B, then all of your competitors, Verizon,
exactly,
Comcast, will also have to raise their price. Now, it was up to Richard Leon, the judge, the district judge, to determine whether or not he thought the DOJ made a case that this could potentially lift prices to the point of a burden on consumers. And what Leon said yesterday was, you failed, DOJ, you failed to make that argument. And so I sat in court a long time. I think what was really hard to understand was, what is the point of price increase in which it would be a problem for consumers?
That's the DOJ, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
The DOJ was saying it would be about 45 cents a month, which adds up to like, you know, $6 a year, $400 million across all consumers for a year. And I think what Leon was saying yesterday in his dissent was, I just don't think that you were able to prove that that's a significant enough burden on consumers. So he let the whole thing go through without any divestiture packages, without any behavioral remedies, which would be promises that AT&T wouldn't, you know, exploit its dominance. And I got to tell you, I was even a little bit surprised that it was such a clear-cut ruling because, goodness, this thing got so dramatic. The judge calls all the reporters in. He doesn't let anyone have phones or laptops. He doesn't let anyone even leave the room until the full ruling is read. It was a little bit dramatic, given the fact that
it is media.
But usually these kind of district court decisions, you just put up a ruling online. And I mean, this is a big merger, but we've seen even bigger mergers, you know. So the whole thing turned into a spectacle. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's going to usher in a new wave of consolidation across media, tech, and telecom that will affect every advertiser, every marketer, brand, media company, really indefinitely.
But can you talk about, you said this has big ramifications for the industry. You alluded to the fact that there are other tech companies now. Obviously, there's, you know, other examples of this playing out in the marketplace. Can you talk about what message this sends to other tech companies, other media platforms, in what's possible? And then we can get a little bit into how does that affect the people in the business how we're buying and planning in the space.
So there's a couple things. One is that the decision supported a vertical merger, which means a merger between two companies in different markets. Obviously, AT&T is a telecom company. They own, they have a broadband business, they have a mobile business, and then Time Warner is a content company. And so this is a signal to all the other corporations out there that are trying to merge with corporations that are in different markets that, hey, this judge or this administration is going to be more lenient about letting those things pass through. So it set a precedent.
Is this almost a necessary step in consolidation to get to the Valhalla of personalization that everyone talks about?
Yes. So I will say this. What can you expect? I mean, there's a lot of other telecom companies out there that are buying up content arms that are probably going to want to buy up video content arms. The biggest standout to me is Verizon. We know that Verizon wanted to go in and buy CBS. Sherry Redstone said no. So there are other telecom companies interested in buying video content partners. There's also tech companies out there, though I will say tech companies like Apple, like
Amazon.
You know, yeah, I mean, those companies, I would say they're a little bit less likely to buy actual TV networks for a few reasons. One, it conflates sort of the editorial responsibility that so many of them have shied away from. When you actually own a network, things change, particularly a lot of these TV networks own news channels. Like, that's really hard. I'm actually curious to see how AT&T manages a news network like CNN and all the burden that comes with that. But the other thing is that tech has so much money and free cash flow. Yeah, I'm sure you can dump it into buying a content company. But a lot of times they're just buying up franchises and talent. Like, look at Netflix. They're just buying up Shonda Rhimes. They don't need to buy ABC. They can just buy the talent that's producing the same type of content without having to actually have the burden of ABC News and all that kind of stuff.
And this is so, if we could go back in time, Alexa and I had worked on some trend spotting. What was that? 1 or 2 years ago now. And one of the key themes that we were rallying around was the idea that tech companies were going to become the new MSOs.
Yeah.
Right. So if you think about what you just said in not having the need to go and buy the network, they're creating the network, right? Mm-hmm. When you see the massive paychecks that, you know, Amazon and Apple, et cetera, are writing in Hollywood, that is a huge signal. And thinking about where and how they're competing in terms of what they're choosing to buy as opposing to choose to acquire, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and acquisitions are tough. First of all, there's a lot of synergies. It usually comes with layoffs. It usually comes with a lot of legal complications.
Yeah.
It also comes with cultural barriers. I mean, I look at this from AT&T and Time Warner. I mean, AT&T is headquartered in Texas. And this is going to be a really hard company to integrate. So you're right in that tech companies, they have the cash to just kind of buy out the assets that they need to create their own. I would look, the next immediate step is look for how this affects telecom. So you know that Comcast is trying to now come swoop in and get and eat up Fox. Remember, Comcast already bought NBC Universal about 7 years ago. So there are some people who are worried about it. Just because AT&T and Time Warner pass doesn't mean every vertical merger will pass. They all have to go through their own regulatory scrutiny. But how it affects advertising and media marketing is so interesting because throughout this entire trial, AT&T was arguing, we need this merger to go through so that we could compete in the market with the FANG companies, the Facebooks and Apples and Googles and Netflix of the world. And for a lot of those big competitors, they're able to sell data-driven advertising. We can't. We can't do it because we don't have the, you know, content to sell it against, et cetera. So that's a huge benefit for the telecom companies, is that they finally have content that they could sell ads against. Remember, they've had the data forever.
Right.
If your set-top box that you have in your living room has everything. It has all of your web data. It has all of your TV data. The problem is they just had nothing really to sell it against. So now this gives them a content arm to sell it against. And I would expect, if you see those charts that have the duopoly off the charts and how much advertising growth they're going to get, I would expect this to start to eat at that a little bit. How much? Who knows? A lot of people say we'll never take down the duopoly. Some people say they'll make a significant impact. I think collectively they could start to do some work and kind of evening out the playing field. And by the way, that's done entirely by design. This administration had an approach to technology, a very different than the Obama administration, neither right or wrong, depends on your beliefs, that in order to curb the power of some of the tech giants that have become monopolistic, like Google and Facebook, you should deregulate legacy industries like telecom, newspapers, and broadcasts to allow them to compete. So this notion of the fact that telecom companies are now going to be able to sell your data for advertising purposes, that's because this administration, through Congress and then was signed by the president, passed a law that allowed them to do it.
Yeah.
Up until 2017, no telecom company could sell that data. So why are all these mergers happening? It's a part of a larger push by the Trump administration to have a more laissez-faire economic view towards media and consolidation to let some of these legacy players compete with the tech giants.
Yes, totally. 100%. You know, I just see this simply as like two things. On the telco side, on the tech side, they don't, to your point, want to have the burden of creating the content in these giant networks. On the content side, they actually don't have the distribution means anymore that they used to.
They're fighting the Facebooks and the Googles. Are networks now getting to go DTC? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
That's what they're trying to do. Now, I will say this. One of these networks see themselves as wholesalers. John Martin, the president of Turner, he said in court countless times, I don't even know the names of the people that watch any of my networks. I don't even know anything about them because the people who have the direct relationships with them are the telecom companies. Right. You pay your telecom company every month. You're not paying CNN. You're not paying Turner or TNT. That's right. So now it kind of removes them from that wholesaler position, and it allows them to get to a more direct-to-consumer relationship with television. I will say this. The one thing that got really complicated during the trial is, like, what the heck do you do about streaming? Because if you are AT&T and you own DirecTV Now, and you now have access to some of the biggest and most necessary content in a skinny bundle, i.e. CNN, TNT, TBS, et cetera, are you going to use that leverage and withhold it from all the other skinny bundles like Sling's Dish, Dish's Sling,
exactly,
or PlayStation View? That was another big argument during the trial. Basically, by allowing this thing to go through with no concessions, the judge is saying, you can do what you want, but also I trust that you're not going to do that because AT&T said over and over and over again that they won't. But I got to tell you, I'm not meaning to be cynical. I'm just trying to be a little bit of a contrarian. When we allowed this to go through between Comcast and NBC 7 years ago, a lot of promises were made that were not upheld. So I think that's one thing that the market should be kind of aware of, especially if you're a marketer, if you're somebody who is buying ads across a lot of these platforms, is like, this might not be super peachy. There's going to be a lot of complications. There's going to be a lot of drama as the thing gets pushed through and enforced. And so time will tell how it all works out. But we're kind of relying on AT&T and Time Warner being of good faith here and being good brokers in this market now that they are like a mega company.
Yeah, because as a buyer, like my first
This is a great opportunity as a buyer.
That's like the first thought going through my head as a trained buyer is saying, like, this eliminates so many hurdles and barriers to get to a consumer in a way that now the data is around the pipes.
The data and the behavior, I can actually start matching
you
up.
You can start seeing the connection.
And we all know that at the end of the day, you can test as many things as you want, but if you don't have great content to test with, like to me, the content is the thing that you chum the waters with, right? To get people interacting.
Well, I think everybody knows, like, and this is obviously where ad tech comes into play and all these sorts of things, is as a media buyer in the marketplace, you know that you have this content company over here who is making great things. And they're like, we have the ability to target people across our ecosystem, et cetera. But we all know that there was the potential for there to be a breakdown once you got to the device level. And what was the reliability to target from set-top box to mobile, et cetera? Well, now if I'm in the AT&T universe, game on.
Game on.
I think the key part in understanding the particular opportunity about AT&T Time Warner is that they hired Brian Lesser from Group M like about a year and a half ago. And he has been developing this ad tech stack for months. Like, it's not like they're going to – by the time this deal goes through – he will have had 2 years of creating an ad tech product that will be pretty much ready to go to market, which is very different than just kind of starting from scratch, starting from the beginning. So what does that ad tech look like? Essentially, they're taking the stack from CNN, all the things that they've used to deploy digital. Because remember, Comcast hasn't really sold anything like across app properties and web in a really sophisticated way, the way that CNN has. And they're going to take CNN's mostly content, and then they're going to match it with A, their data, and B, their plans. I think it'll be great for marketers. I think it'll be good. I know that was a big worry in court that, what if like Comcast and NBC and then AT&T Time Warner like teamed up and created like an amazing data-driven product? Now, as I said, they think they're going to be able to, you know, sell off things, TV content at a higher premium, at a higher CPM, because it will be able to be more customizable and targetable. That's a big thing that they, a big reason that they want to get into this game. I would expect, if I had to give out like a timeline of sorts, that you will be able to, as a marketer, be able to go in and start leveraging these opportunities in 2019. I do think one hard part about this is that storytelling is not at the core of a telecom company's business model.
No.
And this is something that is very scary for the folks I know over at 21st Century Fox. They'll say, John Landgraf told me, the president of FX, said the thing that he's happy about with merging with Disney is at least storytelling is at the heart of their business model. They're going to be able to make corporate decisions based around how they're going to be able to tell the best stories and create the best content. That's just not the case with AT&T. Their business model is to accrue consumers through either a broadband or a wireless plan. And so when that is the core of your focus, you can imagine that the P&Ls get changed and that the same type of focus on content that, you know, some of these networks experience under Time Warner, I don't think it'll, you know, go away. I don't think it's going to be damaged, but it's not going to be the same. And so as it comes to creativity, this is a conversation that a lot of people in the industry are having is, once the tech and telecom companies who are not storytellers buy up all the storytellers, are the storytellers going to be free to tell as good of stories and tell them independently? That is a concern. That is a very, very serious concern.
Does this have the potential to change the way now Turner bundles and sells their content with or without advertising?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, again, the big fear in court was that Turner would now merge with AT&T, give their content to AT&T's skinny bundle, which is called DirecTV Now, and then AT&T would have the leverage to say, competitors, YouTube Live, Hulu Live, you can't have it. We own it. Like, that's a big fear. I will say that the Turner folks argue, look, we need to have as widespread distribution as possible. We're not interested in just being on AT&T's skinny bundle. Like, we want to be on everyone's. So time will tell if people keep their promises by not withholding the content, but this could have a very big impact on the skinny bundle landscape. I will say, if you're a satellite company, which, remember, DirecTV, owned by AT&T, is a satellite company, you are hemorrhaging subscribers right now. Hemorrhaging. People are, some of these companies, I mean, cable companies are too, but satellite companies are in a particularly rough spot. And they don't always have broadband businesses to recoup the losses. So they're really pivoting strong to the skinny bundle streaming space to make up for it. Those two companies I can give you that are the biggest examples are DirecTV, which is owned by AT&T, and then Sling, which is owned by Dish, which is also a satellite company. The problem that these guys are going to have, though, I will say, is a skinny bundle is nowhere near the cost of a pay TV package. That's, if you're paying $40 for a skinny bundle, and these telco companies were used to getting $100 a month for you from you for pay TV, the margins there are staggering. And so, yes, these companies need to push people into skinny bundles to recoup the losses, but will the margins even out? No, which is why they need to invest in ad tech to make up for that.
So what I think is so interesting here is, skinny bundles also mean you have to have great content that is coveted by the audience, right? So, like, people aren't, it's not just like, hey, I just want my basic cable.
It puts pressure on Turner.
Well, it puts pressure to create great content. And look at what Netflix has been doing. It's pouring billions. This is, so to your point, Sarah, like, it's a $1 billion game here.
Yeah.
That they may not recoup. So what's the answer?
There's two things, right? One is, Netflix is a subscription video on demand, whereas the skinny bundles offer live programming. So actually, AT&T doesn't see Netflix as a competitor in this. They're not worried about, the telcos don't worry about Netflix. They actually see Netflix as a really good marketing ploy of, like, oh, you get a free month of Netflix with your pay TV package or whatever it is. But yes, what you're talking about,
I think that's limited. Bundles, don't you, Sarah? Don't you think that's, like, only for a short amount of time here?
It depends. Like, with the skinny bundles, with the live programming, as you were saying, you can only have like 40 channels. Netflix is indefinite. With the 40 channels, though, in creating good programming, you're absolutely right. No skinny bundle is going to take a long tail channel. I was talking to the president of the Broadcasters Association. I said, what happens if you're Viacom and you have all these like MTV3s, all these long tail channels? Those aren't going to make skinny bundles. What happens to them? He's like, they'll die out. They're done.
That's right.
Sarah, before we let you go, back to the grind of...
What do you think?
What are some of the other big trends that you're chasing?
So M&A is just going to continue to be huge. I think I'm having a lot of conversations right now about the... There was such a diversion of attention towards some of the core principles that we were focusing on a lot last year, before Russia, before election meddling, which was measurement and viewability, and just sort of understanding how advertising effectiveness plays into campaigns. And I think that now a lot of the dust has settled between elections and the tech lash and some of these deals. I think you're going to have a rise and a refocus in measurement. And we saw this, I don't know if you guys saw that Integral Ad Science was purchased for $850 million, or at least that's the number that we've been given. That's because there's a value right now in measurement, and there's a value in attribution. So I'd say that's going to be another key theme that we look at heading into the rest of the summer. Okay. And then I'd say the other is just kind of keeping an eye on all the programming trends, what's effective, what's not effective. I thought it was interesting that Roseanne was really hot until she sort of shot herself in the foot.
We're going to go into our kill by DIY.
All this conversation around the tech lash is really going to be something that I would say kill. At this point, we are having a new headline every week about Facebook sold this ad in a bad way to this, or Google is bad at this, or the UK Parliament wants to find this. I think consumers are just saturated by the narrative. We're over it. I think I would just kill the whole techlash narrative, especially, and I think about that as a reporter, even in my reporting, just because, look, it's not like we have a single bill from Congress that's going to pass that's actually hitting these companies. Right. It's not like there's any meaningful regulation that's actually coming in the near future. So I would kill that.
Right. Okay, what would you buy?
I think this new B2B ad tech trend is not super new. I mean, we saw that Salesforce bought Crux, Oracle bought Moat, Integral Ad Science just sold. But I think that everyone sees ad tech as going through this, you know, pivotal moment of consolidation. But the consolidation is to these big B2B players like Salesforce and Oracle and others. And I'm going to keep my eye, and I'm going to keep looking at that and thinking of that as being a good thing, because it's empowering some of the really hot B2B tech companies to really get into the ad game and, again, start to kind of chip away at the duopoly's dominance.
Yes, there is actually more on that on a different episode, because that is a huge topic in and of itself that we don't talk about enough. All right, what would you do yourself?
I think I would start to think about, as a reporter, how I'm going to cover a lot of these really confusing topics in a way that makes it more digestible and friendly to a regular person, like my mom or my sister, as opposed to a trade audience. Like, even coming on this podcast, yeah, the three of us are just totally nerding out. And I think one of the things that I'm realizing is that these trends affect people. They affect the price of your cable bill. They affect, yeah, the price of your phone bill. And how can we think about ways to tell the story of what's happening in our time to people who it's actually affecting in a way that's not super inside baseball? So that's one thing I want to work on and do myself a little bit better.
I think we should do that together, because the Adlandia was actually founded on one of those things, was this shouldn't just be for the industry. This should be for people who are just interested in what's happening in media, marketing, communications.
Yeah, and affected by the work, yeah, that goes out.
Exactly. So. Sarah Fisher,
always
thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Sarah Fisher.
Always super smart, always on the front lines, getting us the information we need to make informed decisions. So thank you.
Thank you, Matt Turk, Andy Bowers, Jacob Weisberg, our friends and family at Panoply.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.